Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And, you know, I'm not much of a lady. You know that. Feminine is not a word that most people would use to describe me. I mean, I'm not mannish or butch. I tend to hover somewhere in between somewhat tomboyish and somewhat girly. But a lady, I am not. And seriously, thank Jesus for that, because who wants to be a lady with their secretarial schools and their sweet cocktails and their garters and stockings and high heels and girdles and face powder and cold cream and those hand washable unmentionables and their sublimated personalities and acquiescence and quiet, dark, smoldering anger and unmet potential? Oh, wait a minute. For a second, I thought I was Peggy Olson there talking about Betty Draper. I've been rewatching seasons 2 and 3 of Mad Men lately. Now, Betty Draper was a lady. Peggy, not so much, which is probably why I love her and why she was able to become a successful copywriter. I'm much more like her. Actually, I'm even more like Peggy's friend, Joyce. Joyce was the photojournalist who worked for Time Magazine in the office upstairs. She was a no-nonsense kind of gal. No girdle, no makeup, a rebel. A lesbian. Now, I have a husband, but other than that, I'm more in the Joyce Peggy camp and definitely not in the Joan Betty camp. I mean, to be one of those gals with their lacquered hairdos and proper foundation garments and philandering loutish husbands? No way. Too much work. And fearfully, always trying to keep the facade from cracking and the illusion from fading. Fearing aging and abandonment and irrelevance. Plus, Joyce was played by David Mamet's daughter. And how cool is she? Now, I enjoy being a sort of girl. Somewhere between. A keep-em-guessing kind of gal. That's me. Somewhere right in the middle. Halfway. 50%. And another reason I'm no lady is that I'm not afraid to discuss my age. Now, do we still train girls and young women to not discuss their age, as in a lady never tells her age? Well, why not? What's so embarrassing? We age. End of story. Like cheese or wine or any other living creature on this entire planet, save for maybe Cher or Goldie Hawn. Now, I have a very, very good friend named Ida, and she's an older lady, but she won't say how old of a lady. She's not very ladylike either, although she never leaves the house without lipstick, but she'll never disclose her age. And I don't think it's because of vanity or some vestige of her generation's taboo on it. I think it's because she really doesn't feel old and doesn't want people to treat her any differently than they do now if they knew the actual number. And that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I love her so much. But I was teasing her about it once, and I told her that my best guess was that she was somewhere between 65 and 90, and she hit me. The actual number is probably more like 80, but don't tell her that I said that. She likes to keep the mystery alive, and I love her for that. So I'm somewhere in the middle of being a lady and being a total butch, and I'm right in the middle of my life, literally. I'm 45, 46 next month, November 25th, if you're planning any surprises. And though the official life expectancy for American women is 81, I think that living to 90 is a realistic plan. So I'm at the halfway point, according to my projected life expectancy. Although I may run out of money by then, and I might need diapers toward the end. But luckily, I'm a consultant now. Have I mentioned that yet this week? And that means I should be raking it in a few years. And I'm pretty positive that my basically foodiness-free lifestyle will contribute an awful lot to that longevity. There is no way in hell that a life of protein bars and vitamin water and whole grain Captain Crunch is contributing to anyone's longevity, and I'll bet my entire consulting-funded retirement account that our collective death age starts to creep backwards as this generation of foodiness-fed chupsters starts to enter adulthood, spending their lives playing video games and tweeting and sexting while never actually doing anything. If one in three kids are now showing signs of fatty liver disease, what does that hold for us in the future? Rent WALL-E or Idiocracy, and you'll see exactly what the future holds, and then be glad they don't actually have the suicide checkout centers like they did in Soylent Green, because that's exactly what you'll feel like doing. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back.
The following program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. An incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
Now, foodiness tricks us in so many ways, in so many guises. It tricks us into thinking that we're eating real food. Most foodiness is only half food. There's just enough in there to fool you into eating it, giving you the illusion of real food, but then padding the rest out with fakery, like lip-syncing to your own auto-tuned track at the VMAs or wearing a padded bra. Like the so-called whole grain cereals or industrial whole grain breads that line today's supermarket shelves? A sprinkling of mechanically removed bran and germ back onto a pile of highly processed sugary white flour and voila, whole grains. Or a genetically engineered foodiness monster albino wheat strain with no phytonutrients or much else that qualifies, according to the shutdown government, as whole grain, but conveniently looks and tastes and behaves in your poor body just like its truly poor white cousin. So-called whole grain bread is like Condoleezza Rice. She's a black woman from Alabama, so we trusted her, but she was really just another evil warmongering white man on the inside. Think about it. Foodiness products tend to be just enough actual food to pull the corn-fed wool over our eyes, to illuminate the health halo that the marketers have raised around them, to trick you. It's trickery and illusion. It's the man behind the curtain, furiously turning knobs and dials, keeping the illusion going. Only it's nerds at a lab in New Jersey and douchebag marketing people in Duluth with undergrad degrees in public relations. It's the kind of math that even I can do. Half food plus half fake food equals all foodiness, right in the middle, halfway, 50%. I started thinking about this halfway point as a defining factor for foodiness after a story that came out this week about chicken nuggets. Now, seriously, if the public ever thought that chicken nuggets were just chunks of chicken, breaded and fried and served up with a dipping sauce, then we seriously deserve the mess we're in right now. And P.S., I mean, of course, we deserve this mess. And by we, I mean the Red State Tea Party morbidly obese potato people who keep us in this mess by dragging the liberal elite down with them. Confession. I used to eat McNuggets in junior high school when I didn't know any better, and I also drank Tab. Even back in the 80s in junior high, if I broke one of those nuggets open, it was pretty obvious to me that you weren't getting a prime portion of chicken breast meat. So much to our collective dismay and disbelief, last week a team of researchers at the University of Mississippi, the state, by the way, with the highest rates of obesity in the country, released their results from a study of nuggets from two major fast food chains. And guess what they found? Hold on, girls. You are not going to believe this one. You better go get Hildy from the typing pool and Kitty from the switchboard and Jane from Mr. Sterling's office, even if the door is locked. And sit down, ladies, because this one will blow the seams right off your nylons. It turns out that those chicken nuggets from two major fast food corporations, those beloved bits of child-friendly fried foodiness fun, the mainstay dietary staple of picky, overindulged, infantilized children everywhere, are only 40 to 50% actual chicken muscle meat. Muscle is what we eat when we eat meat. A leg, a thigh, a sirloin, those are muscles. A chicken breast is a muscle. It's a whole visible, identifiable part of an animal. Now, did anyone really think that nuggets were little muscles? From which part of the bird's anatomy does the nugget muscle hail from? Come on, even Sally Draper, with all her emotional damage and Betty-inflicted baggage, probably didn't grow up to feed her kids nuggets. She knew better, or maybe not. Sally Draper probably ran off to join a commune in 1972 and then washed up in Marin County somewhere in 1978 in rehab and then married a tech entrepreneur, had four kids, got divorced in the 90s, and is now living off her trust fund and teaching senior yoga at Esalen. But I digress. She probably didn't feed them nuggets. The middle-class mothers on the other side of the highway fed their kids nuggets. They ate them, too. Their husband, who worked at the plant, the last plant in town, died at 60, and then they spent the last 20 years of their lives watching The Price is Right and eating light frozen chicken nuggets until they got put into a nursing home, but I digress again. So what's the other 50 to 60% of the nugget substrate really composed of? Not chicken. Then what? I mean, what's really the problem here? It just sounds like a ratio or formula that I would have been teaching back at the culinary school during my teaching days during our charcuterie and sausage module. We chefs all love to make the unfortunately named force meats, which really sounds like a gay swingers club from the 70s, but is really just pureed meat scrap with added fat and spices and salt and a binder like bread or egg or cream. Basically, a nugget mixture. But those egghead scientists down at Ole Miss, they had to ruin everyone's nugget party. They found some other stuff in those nuggets. Like what? Well, other chickeny stuff or chicken-esque stuff like skin and fat, which are okay by me. I like those bits of the chicken best, actually. And blood vessels and tendons and bone. Okay, not all of them are okay. Tendon and bone, yeah, I've been to Southeast Asia. Blood vessels, not so much. And other stuff. To quote the article, generous quantities of fat and other tissue, including connective tissue and bone spicules. What's a spicule? It sounds kind of racist. Also, some blood vessels and nerve present, as well as epithelium, the stuff that glands are made of. So, not much muscle, but still all chicken. Along with binders and starches and thickeners and flavorings and colorings and salt and sugar and all the other magically delicious stuff that makes nuggets like crack for underparented children with no boundaries sitting in fast food booths, stuffing their faces with the nuggets, getting the sauce on their iPad video games while their 400-pound father stuffs his face while he secretly strolls through internet porn. That's the American dream right there, isn't it? Now back to forcemeats and the like. Coincidentally, now that, back to force meats, and coincidentally, that kind of stuff is actually really hot right now in the chefy culinary world. All kinds of traditional French terrines and pâtés and artisan sausaging is going on, a big revival of those sorts of techniques, and everyone has gone awful crazy, eating up all the organs and using up every last bit of the animals in a nose-to-tail cooking frenzy and then getting all macho competitive about it and then ruining it for us lady chef types. And therein and therefore lies my underlying thesis, the 50% thing again. While 50% of the foodiness-loving universe is okay with stuffing their chubby cheeks and greasy paws with half chicken nuggets and not giving a second thought to what they're actually made of, us chefy types are doing the same thing, but we're leaving out about 40 or 50 of the chemicals involved. Now, given that those kind of people don't have a first thought either, I guess you can cut them some slack. There is no second thought. The other half, my half, the snooty foodie elitists, are obsessively making basically the same stuff, minus the industrial chemicals, thickeners, colorings, preservatives, starches, gums, and texturizers that the foodiness industrial complex uses to cover up for the lack of actual chicken in the nugget. So those poor suckers who feed that shit to their kids thinking it's just pure, lean, 100% chicken breast? Well, knowledge is power. I mean, didn't they watch Schoolhouse Rock? How about a little ingredient reading? It's all right there. They need to learn how to read and think for themselves and not let the Tea Party and the Monsanto-funded right-wing do it for them. Or soon, it'll not be 40 to 50% chicken, but 30, then 20, then no actual food in our food at all, and they'll be proudly pronouncing that it's their constitutional right. to eat 0% food foodiness. And don't you dare try to tell me not to. And then they deserve everything they voted for. I mean, for all I care, let them. The problem is they're dragging all us liberal elites down with them. You want to hand the world over to corporations and trust them to make your food and believe that they have your best interest at heart? Okay, do it. I'll be hiding out in the fallout shelter roasting a whole chicken. And when I run out of that, I guess I'll have to eat potato people. Maybe I'll turn them into nuggets and open a post-apocalyptic drive-thru. But what sauce would I serve with them? We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Now, if you're a fan of Let's Get Real, remember you can follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also find us on Facebook. You can also go to my website, letsgetrealshow.com. You can also find every Heritage Radio show ever on the heritageradionetwork.com website or on iTunes. We're all on iTunes and we're all for free. It's very democratic. Remember that Heritage Radio Network is also listener supported. Join us, one of us, become a member. Click that button and join. You really should. It's not fair that you're listening and not paying. Okay? It's like PBS. So I've said it before. Foodiness infantilizes us. You know that. It's been a theme of the show since day one. It makes us dependent and slow and dumb. Or rather, even more dependent and slower and even dumber. It turns us into overfed, overweight, overgrown toddlers, sucking on sippy cups all day long and eating food that requires no fork or knife or even hands or even teeth anymore. It takes control of our true decision-making ability and tricks us into thinking we've made choices, smart choices, better choices. Our smart, sugary cornflour cereal with pink berry-colored flakes is so much better than your dirty, inconvenient, real food. There's nothing smart or better about foodiness choices. Anytime you pass over real food for foodiness, you're making a terrible choice and voting with your wallet or your sugar coma-dulled brain. Now, last week, a friend of mine came over whom I hadn't seen in a few months. And he has a son who's three, and he and his wife separated about a year ago. So the boy has really only consciously been aware of his life spent in two different homes, and he seems to be doing okay with that. He spends three nights a week with dad and four nights a week with mom, and every weekend they swap, and it's all he's ever really known, so it's working out okay. And I was thinking about that as I was putting this show together, and it occurred to me how we Americans are also, like little toddlers, caught up in our parents' dysfunctional divorce and custody arrangements. Mom and dad wanting to separate, but being so utterly tied together and so deeply enmeshed that they never really can. So we're dragged from one home to the other in a constant battle between real food and foodiness. The government mom urging us to eat more vegetables, drink more water, eat whole grains, exercise, while at the same time taking major alimony from her supposed ex-spouse, foodiness industrial dad, who's urging us to eat their spinachy dusted chips, their blue-flavored vitamin-colored waters, their phony fruit-filled toaster cereal bar nuggets in a tube. Push, pull, push, pull. One pulling one way, the other way. But both really just the same big bad parent. The same one who long ago sold you out with that first bottle of formula in the hospital, that first jar of Gerber's, that first foodiness kid food in a pouch, those first bites of nugget. Government mom and foodiness dad are really the same entity. It's like being the child of same-sex parents, but one is a cross-dresser. Guess which one? So you know what? If that's the case, I want to be an orphan. I want to have no story, no people, no ties, like Don Draper, who had no past. His real history was so crappy that when he had the chance to steal someone else's, he grabbed it and ran. I want to be free to make my own choices, to spend the next 45 years, the next 50% of my life eating the 100% nugget, the real Greek yogurt, the stone ground 100% whole wheat, the real actual honest food that my great-grandparents ate and never questioned. They lived to be in their 80s. I have a pretty good chance. But of course, if that happens and I'm free to eat nothing but real food and no foodiness, and foodiness doesn't exist, I don't have Let's Get Real, and I have no shot of being the Jon Stewart of food, and I become just some vegetable-growing, chicken-raising Jew on a commune who runs the commune boot camp, and I have no one to feel superior to. See, I am split, after all. Without the potato people, I'm not an elite. There's no elite if everyone qualifies, and there's no Let's Get Real left. Fortunately, this outcome isn't an option anyway. We're headed like a runaway mobility scooter right into the WALL-E, idiocracy, dystopian future. And Chris, my co-producer, and I are going to be right there getting rich and famous off of it. And that is the raison d'etre of Let's Get Real. And that to show you how not to eat shit. So if you don't want to eat chicken that is only half chicken, and you don't want to drive to be served at my post-apocalyptic drive-thru, keep tuning in to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. That's all the time we have tonight. Thanks to Joe in the control room. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer and co-writer. Thanks to Ben Kaplan, who wrote my amazing theme music. This is the Heritage Radio Network. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.